Hi, everybody. This is Mike Oppenheim, and you are listening to Coffin Talk, Interviews with the Living, a weekly podcast that explores how our views on death affect the way we live our life. And this week, we have a very special guest, someone who I met through Substack, which is where you probably found this podcast, if not my essays. Her name is Kat Albrecht, and she's a police detective turned pet detective, author, mystery writer, and inspirational speaker. Since 1998, she has trained professional and volunteer pet detectives, some with dogs, trained to track lost pets even, and through her online Pet Detective Academy. You can read her quirky and fascinating stories through her Substack called Armed Robbers to Airedales, and I am a fan and a huge avid fan, actually, of her Substack, and I read everything you write, Kat, and I've been so excited to talk to you. So welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Mike. I'm doing well. And yeah, you're like my one fan on Substack that comments on everything. So
wow.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah, well, it's a good community when we support each other. And I found you through some familiar group, but I've long since left that. And what I really just like is your attitude. And you do something which is rare, which is you talk a lot, honestly, about your philosophy and spirituality, but you also tell hilarious stories and things about your personal life. And I love that mix. So in case it comes up during the podcast, everyone, there will be a direct link in the notes section of this podcast to find her Substack. So just know that ahead of time. And let's get on with our first question that we ask every single guest, which is, how old are you? Where did you grow up? And what generation, if any, do you consider yourself a member of?
Oh, wow. I am 63. I grew up in Central California in a city called Fresno. I currently live on Vancouver Island in Canada because I married a Canadian. And what generation? I'm a baby boomer.
Awesome. I'm totally surprised that you live in Canada and one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. That is, by surprise, I mean jealous. That's awesome. And you lived in Santa Cruz, which is one of my favorite places ever. I grew up in Arinda next to Berkeley, if that is familiar to you.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and Fresno, I've been to twice and I will never go back.
Same here. I have a brother there and I still won't go back even to see my brother because it's like never again.
Actually, yeah. Speaking of police work, the most scary thing I've ever seen in my life from my car was leaving Fresno very late at night to go home. I was in college with friends and we were actually sober, but I saw this person at a stoplight with blood all over his head and the windshield was smacked. And then he proceeded to get on the highway with us and his speed would fluctuate from 20 to 90. And this is before cell phones. So we were terrified and we wanted to report him, but we had no idea how to do it. So,
Wow.
But anyway, let's move back to you and focus this podcast on you. I think the first question I want to ask is just like a very like vague question that you can add as many details as you want, but you clearly are an animal lover. Is this something that started at, like, immediately at birth, or like what was kind of your evolution into being someone who's directly associated with animals?
Yeah, well, we grew up with a family dog, a Chihuahua, that would bite me when I was little, but I grew to love dogs because I read books as a kid. Like the Big Red book, you know, Big Red was a series about an Irish setter, and Old Yeller, of course, was the one that cried at the end. And, but, you know, I read dog books and just became fascinated, especially with hunting dogs. And so I grew to want a Weimaraner, which is a silver colored, beautiful, bird dog. And that's what I ended up ultimately getting and training as my first cadaver dog, and her name was Rachel. And on my Substack, I'm writing my was a published memoir called Pet Tracker, so I'm sharing that on my Substack for free. And Rachel was the key dog, the first dog that I trained as a pet tracker. So it's been a lifelong love of dogs and also law enforcement that led me into initially into police work when I was 31.
Yeah. And like I tried to explain in my introduction about you, you kind of write about four things. And I love the mystery. Like every time I get a little inbox notification that you've wrote something new, I'm like, ooh, what's it going to be about? And I'm going to ask you questions about all four topics. But let's stick to this one for a little bit. This is like probably the most annoying question you're ever going to get asked, but I'm asking on behalf of people my age. How often do people ask you questions that allude to Jim Carrey and Ace Ventura? And how do you handle that?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's, it's common when people first hear pet detective. Ever since I started this journey, I've gotten that, and it, especially in TV interviews, and you know, I've been on Animal Planet and you know, several other national, international publications in the past years, and it almost always comes up. I'm fine with it. You know, I understand the humor, that's the connection. It used to piss me off, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I, like, one statement I made one time in an interview was, you know, when people think about veterinarians, especially if your dog is, you know, on death's door, you don't go in there thinking, oh, look, it's Dr. Doolittle who talks to the animals. You know, they don't relate a goofy cartoon or maybe don't know Dr. Doolittle. It was a stupid movie about a doctor that would hear animals speak to him. And so anyway, you know, I'm over it, I would say. Because the work we do is serious, and it really is helpful to people that need help.
Yeah, no, I really get that from you. And what do you do? How common is it when you're actually like in, okay, this is kind of a layered question. A lot of people kind of stand at guard and like get nervous around police officers in uniform specifically. Even if they're like law abiding and great, you know, people, it's just a little unnerving. And then a lot of people also get kind of stiff around dogs. So I figure there's kind of like a double factor when you're in a uniform and you have a dog. Like if I was in an airport and someone walks by with a dog, I'm not trafficking drugs. I still get nervous. Like I don't know how to explain it, but, so are you perceptive?
I never knew this.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why people would never talk to me. Now I understand.
I mean, that is kind of essentially my question. What is it like to carry authority? And I'm asking this specifically to you because you're a very kind, like generous, giving person. You're like I said, we're going to get into your philosophy about Christianity and Jesus and life and death. But, you know, that loving side of yours is certainly not something people assume when they see a person in uniform.
Well, and I didn't really have that when I was in uniform.
That's true.
I was such a foul mouthed, you know, I became a police officer, not because I wanted to help people. I became a police officer because I wanted to be paid. It was so selfish. I wanted to be paid for my passion, which was law enforcement and training dogs. And when I discovered that I could go to the police academy, get a bloodhound, train it to track people, it was like, oh my gosh, this is what I'm going to do. And it's what I did. And so I was never really there, because I was, you know, this generous, kind, loving person. I mean, I was a Christian at the time, but I really wasn't acting like a Christian or living like one, right? God was just kind of there, but not there. And so, you know, one of the first things I remember that I noticed when I was a rookie, and especially when I first started driving around on my own, which scary that they gave me a gun and that they expected me to know how to use it, you know. But that when I was driving around, it was like, I can't pick my nose while I drive because everybody looks at me. You know, I noticed I pull up to a stop sign and everybody there is like looking at me, and I'm like, what did I do? You know? So, it was really a different, interesting transition. And yeah, people, you know, have different perceptions. And certainly over the years now, you know, law enforcement has changed, you know, especially with in the past 5 years, just seeing the horrific things that have, you know, had taken place and the community, just so sad to see the breakdown between community and law enforcement, you know, and I don't know if that's ever going to be repaired to the level that it needs to be, but yeah, you know, it was different, but it was so fun. Oh my gosh. To have a job where you would go from pure boredom to this hyper, you know, the next thing you go, you got a gun call or you go into a robbery in progress and you're like, wah, you know, the adrenaline is just out of the, you know, flying out of you like crazy. But it was really fun. It was dangerous at times, you know, of course, boring at times, interesting. But what I loved the most about it was no call was ever the same and you never knew what was going to happen in your day. I loved that more than when I was a couple times I was a detective. And sitting in the office with case files piled on my desk, you know, the stress of having to do this work, and it was just not fun. I hated it. You know, people would think, oh, you'd love being a detective. For me, it was like, man, I want to get back on the streets because it's just too fun out there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And not including like the last 5 years and the shifts, just because it's too hard to speak on that with the specific question I'm about to ask you, what would be your advice to a young person who's interested in law enforcement, but they're not sure if they could A, cut it, or B, if it's really going to work out? Like, what would you tell them is the test they should give themselves?
You got to be strong in English. Believe it or not, that's one of the things, you know, like when I was in the academy, some of the guys and a couple of the gals that were in there really struggled with the report writing and the English aspect. And if you were bad in English, you wouldn't make it through the academy. So really surprisingly, you really need to know how to, you need to focus on reading and writing. You know, you just got to come to peace to know, you got to know a couple things. Are you willing to die? You know, are you willing to risk your life to save others? Are you super afraid of dying? Which I know we're going to get in talking about that too. Mm-hmm. And would you be willing and able to take a life if you needed to, you know? That I came close to that when I haven't written about this at all, but I mm-hmm. came close to that in a SWAT call that we had where I was still a rookie and the mm-hmm. guy was, inside his house armed with a gun, threatening to come out and shoot at the officers. And every time he would come and open the front door, you know, I had my gun pointed at him. I had the safety off and I had my finger on the trigger. And if he had pointed his gun at me, I would have been justified in taking his life. And I remember at the time thinking, I'm still a rookie. I can't believe I'm having to kill somebody. Well, thank God I didn't have to. We ended up catching him after this taking him into custody without any shots being fired. But it was, you know, those are some of the things that you need to consider. But if you're if you love adrenaline, you know, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that get into skydiving or things that, you know, like, how can you jump from a plane? You know, it would be a job that you would want to consider, you know, it is amazing.
That's a great answer. Wow. Thank you. I would never in a million years have guessed ever like most of what you just said. So that's awesome. Yeah. And I think it's a good time to kind of transition into philosophy and spirituality. Although I do want to circle back to some of your hilarious stories and your creative takes on them. But we'll do that more towards the end. So for now, let's talk about, now you are a Christian and you write about it and you keep alluding to the fact that you were like still technically one, but weren't like great at it. So before we get into like what changed and why you're the way you are now, why don't you just walk us briefly through like your childhood up until your 20s, your relationship with religion?
Okay. So, you know, I was raised in a real super ultra conservative religious church where I really never, I mean, it was about Jesus and God, but it was all this formalized reading of these pre-done prayers. You know, I never was really told that Jesus is alive and that he wants to live inside of you and have, you know, because we are spiritual beings, we're body, soul, and spirit. And that he, you know, that he loves me enough that he died for me and that, you know, that I can have an intimate relationship, that the God that created everything wants to live inside of me and wants to speak to me and wants to, and have a plan for me and all this stuff. It was like, that just was never in my paradigm and I never heard that. So, but then when I was 13, my sister explained it to me that, you know, no, this is what the Bible says. And I never read the Bible when I was going to the church we went to because we didn't have to. And so she explained to me that, you know, Jesus wants to be the Lord of your life, you know, and it sounds really corny and stupid. Or when people say, you know, my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, it's kind of like, well, what's that? Or people are turned off by it or whatever, but it's true. You know, he wants to be Lord, meaning he wants to be first in your life, and he wants to be Savior, meaning he wants you to acknowledge that, yeah, he kind of died, kind of rose from the dead, and he's kind of up there in heaven. But at the same time, the spiritual aspect, he can be inside of you. And so it was like, what, really? So at 13, I invited him into my heart. You know, as I was growing up as a teen, he was just kind of there. But then I drifted away, you know. And so for 20-something years, I was out, you know, drinking, sleeping around, doing all the things that Christians aren't supposed to be doing, you know. And led a very independent life, really, apart from God. But it wasn't until like in 1988 that I finally kind of circled back around and said, okay, God, I want you in my life. And so I kind of like rededicated my life to him. And so it was actually then jumping ahead 19, 93 when I had, and I'm writing about this in my Substack and my under Pet Tracker. And that's my memoir that I tell that story of how I made that transition. And I just had this, I was so desperate because my passion was to use my bloodhounds on, you know, criminal cases. And yet I wasn't being allowed to do that. And so I was being blocked from my passion, and I wanted out of that police officer job that I had. And I was so desperate. I had heard a sermon about hearing God's voice, and I was like, really? But you know, what happened was I was so desperate that I said, God, if, you know, speak to me. And so my first step was I believed it was possible. And that's one huge thing that we don't realize in North America is we are, because we're in such a humanistic culture here in North America, and unbelief is such a huge thing. There's just so few people that really believe in a lot of things I'm talking about. But and we all have to make that decision. Are we going to believe or not, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I said, God, speak to me. And he spoke. And so I don't want to get into that story. It'll just take too long. But he spoke, and it ended up being a word of instruction, basically for me to stop what I was going after. I was chasing after a particular police officer job. But when I realized that God was clearly telling me no, I turned around and I drove home. And 6 weeks to the day after I made that decision to trust that he had something better planned for me, I was blessed with the job at the university where I became a police officer. I started using my dogs on cases. My dogs started finding people, finding evidence on a homicide case. The doors, God just opened up the doors for that passion I had to use my dogs that I had trained. I haven't gotten to that part in my story yet, but my dogs were very successful. And then the turning point came in 1996 when my bloodhound AJ, he had saved a man's life and earned a national life-saving award and all these great things. He went missing. My own bloodhound dug out and was lost in the Santa Cruz Mountains. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? I brought another dog in. I scented that dog on his bedding, and that dog tracked him down in 20 minutes. And that's when God gave me the idea, you know, I know how to train dogs to find people. Why aren't we training them to find lost pets? We have drug detection, bomb detection, termite, now COVID detection, all kinds of detection dogs. Why aren't we training cat detection dogs and taking them out and helping families find their missing pets? And so that's the new journey that God led me on. If I had, when I was chasing after that wrong job that I wanted, if I had not believed that God would speak to me, if I had not trusted that he had a plan for my life, I never would have been on Animal Planet and People Magazine, writing books, doing all the things that I'm doing, and developed what I have now, which is a training program of pet detectives worldwide that are out there helping families and making a difference. So everything in my life traces back to that day in March of 1993, where I believed and I obeyed and God changed me.
Wow. And I, like, the only thing I was negative in that answer is that as a fan of your reading, you gave me 2 spoiler alerts, but it's okay. I'll forgive you.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. The AJ thing nearly crushed my heart, but as long as I know it's okay, I'm fine. It was funny because before the call to our audience, I'm explaining this. My wife is always on the calls and she's as much of an animal lover as I am, if not like 20 million times more. And my only thing that I had to discuss with her before the podcast is I was like, you might have to hear something about like an animal getting hurt, you know, and then I warned you, like, just lie and say they're all okay. But that really is special. And I think the part that there's 3 things that I really want to like hyper focus on that you said, which is 1, the culture that everyone is in that's humanistic and individualistic and like very much you're not smart if you have faith in something that isn't scientifically provable, which is different from saying a lot of other things. And it's not about religion per se. It's about faith in a power. And then the other thing you said, I think that is alarming in an individualistic culture like ours, is this idea that something else would get inside of us and tell us what to do. That's a very like anti-American specifically, you know? And yet to me, and I'm 42 the day we're recording this. Not, I didn't turn 42 today, but as we record this.
Yeah.
And it's funny because if you told me that at like 33, I would have responded pretty similarly. I would have said, yeah, that sounds lame, Kat. Like, I don't want someone controlling me. And now I'm like, oh, yeah, I need to go in my backyard after this call and close my eyes and ask God for guidance again, because like it's actually fun to not follow orders, but to follow passionate guidance.
Oh my God. I can't even tell you what an amazing life it is to live like this, because I've lived the other side. I've lived without God those 20 some years when I was sleeping and drinking and doing all the things that everybody else does, right? Mm-hmm. And lived a very independent life, did what I wanted to do, which, you know, but God wooed me. He loves us so much. And what it's like, he pines for us to spend time with him. The best book I can recommend on this subject to learn more about hearing his voice is a book called Forever Ruined by For the Ordinary. Forever Ruined for the Ordinary. And the author is Joy Dawson. And it's just an amazing, just the encounters that she shares of hearing God's voice and the things you need to do. And it's, you know, it's, he's not going to speak to everybody, you know, I mean, there are conditions, right? Yeah. But basically there are three different sources of things that you can hear, or the thoughts that come to you. They can either come from yourself, they can come from the demonic world, or they can come from the heavenly. They can come from God, Jesus, Holy Spirit, whatever, the three in one. And so that's kind of the principles behind that, right? So we're always thinking things, but we don't realize that there are forces out there. I mean, you know, when you think about like the school shootings, I mean, some of the crazy, the crime, the things you see happening in the news and stuff, like what are they thinking? Well, those thoughts came from somewhere.
And I also think what's really important for people to hear in that is that your thoughts are not to be trusted or not trusted. They're just thoughts. But meanwhile, there's a secondary thought mechanism to test them, which is, I use the word intuition because I'm most comfortable with it. And my wife and I even have like an inside joke, which is if I ask her for advice and she says, I think, I stop her and I say, no. I don't want to know what you think. I want to know, like, because I know the powers of the universe like speak through us. And so my wife is like very in tune to them, and then she'll stop and she'll start over. And then I trust her advice and it always works. So like you said, that, there's different conduits and there's different ways to receive messages. And, you know, and I've said this to my audience a million times, I'm not Christian. I'm not, and I'm not Jewish, and I'm not any religion, but I'm like so attracted now to people who have faith and confidence in their faith, because it's you all and myself now that I'm in this gang, we're happier. Like, and people can say, oh, ignorance is bliss and all that, but I don't think there's an ignorance to what we're discussing. So anyway, back to you. Let's ask the pivotal question first, and then we'll get into some more fun questions. Not that this is my favorite question, actually. But what do you think is going to happen to you when you die? And I guess as a little bit of a twist to that, has that changed at all in your life?
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Coffin Talk. I am proud to say that we are offering premium subscriptions at my website, mikeyopp.com. That's MIKEYOPP.com. So please head over and consider supporting us. Thank you so much.
No. Well, I guess when I was younger, you know, my dad died when I was 17. He had a heart attack in our home, and I did CPR and couldn't save him. But it was, so I was exposed to death at, you know, a rather young age. But you know, I always believed in heaven, but, you know, never really gave it a lot of thought, you know, I mean, except when I made the decision, you know, was battling with, you know, do I become a police officer actually or not? And am I willing to risk my life and all that? You know, it was kind of like, well, yeah, I'm going to go to heaven. I'll be okay. But I didn't really have a clear picture of what heaven would be like until I read the book, and there's videos on YouTube by this, it's called Imagine Heaven. And it's by, the author's name is John Burke, B-U-R-K-E. Oh my word. He spent 30 years writing this book, where he interviewed, people from all types of faith. Like, he's got a video on YouTube called Imagine the God of Heaven is the name of the video. And like, he's interviewed people that have died, that had near-death experiences, who came back and shared what they experienced, and looked at the patterns of similarity of people seeing and meeting Jesus. Like, and these are like, the first one on his video was an atheist teenager. The second one was a Hindu who thought he was going to be reincarnated when he died, but he met Jesus in heaven. The other one was a guy that was a follower of Islam, a Muslim that was from Rwanda that died. And it's just these amazing stories of credible people, like a pilot, a police officer, a doctor. So it's not all these, you know, we're thinking UFO, kooky, you know, I mean, people just think whatever they want to think and believe what they want to believe about things. But These are actual experiences from people who weren't even Christians that went up to heaven and met Jesus and had these experiences. But the things that they describe and stuff, it's like, man, I can't wait. So my view on heaven is I look forward to the day that I die. I just, what I told my husband is, I just hope I don't swear before it happens because I've still to this day struggle with spouting out, you know, the F word. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to say that, but there are times when things happen to me, and one happened, we were almost T-boned by, there was a police car around this corner coming towards us. I had the green light. I looked to the left, the police car goes through the intersection past me. I look to the right and I see him gone. I start driving forward and I look to the left and there was a second police car coming straight at us. Code 3 and going, must have been going 80 or 90. And thank goodness I knew not to brake, because if I had done what most people do would be to stop, we would have been T-boned and it would have been bad. And I instead instinctively stepped on the gas and got going through in front of the police car, got out of his way. But I said the F word. And I said to my husband, I would like to know that at the moment I'm going to die, that I'm saying, Jesus, here I come, you know, instead of the F word. Right. But, you know, we're all human. Nobody's perfect. God loves us.
I think the tenets of forgiveness and also I believe intentionality matters. So I think there's like, you know, swearing at someone and wishing that they feel negativity coming from you is like one thing. And then, you know, a crutch phrase that we've like trained ourselves to say is another thing. So, I mean, that's just my philosophy, but.
Yeah.
And so I guess kind of back to your work and your life, which, by the way, I didn't say this at the time, but I love that, like, you knew what you wanted to do, but you were wrong about like specifically what you wanted to do. And then this other idea that like no one had even come up with or at least made popular is what you end up doing. And now that's what you're A, famous for, and B, it's such a cool and nuanced thing. So I would like to focus the rest of the podcast on your relationship to training and using animals and how you want to like present that to people who love animals. Like, so I guess I'd start with, pets don't live as long as we do. And that's like the hardest part of getting a pet. Like the older I get, it makes it harder, not easier.
Yeah.
Do you have like a philosophy on that?
I'm just mad that I'm mad that God made it that parrots live for 30 years and dogs only live for 10 or 15. It's like, it's so not fair. You know? My philosophy is, you know, I love dogs and I love cats too. And I wish that they live longer, but you know, the work that I know that God led me into, he loves animals and he knows the love that people have for them. And back when I started this journey, which actually was 1997, actually 96 is when my blood had escaped and that idea came, but it took me over 6 months into 97 for me to get the guts to actually train my dog, Rachel, to find lost pets. Was there was nothing there. There was obviously no internet. There was internet and email, but there was no Facebook and social media. There was nothing like there is today of the many people that there is help out there to help you find your missing pet. Mm-hmm. So I would get phone calls from people in Alaska wanting me to fly there with my bloodhound to find their missing pet.
Wow.
And I couldn't do it. You know, I realized the answer is not me and my dog. The answer is me developing a training program and training others. And so that's what God led me into doing. And it's been a hard journey because it's not been easy because there's been opposition and people that were jealous of me, people that I trained that turned on me, and just a lot of ugly stuff out there in the journey. But, you know, it's all good. I'm now focusing on writing. Going to be writing books and I continue to train people. My website is missinganimalresponse.com. So we have an online training program there, but
cool.
Yeah, it's all good.
That's so great. And I guess, what is like the story that you would tell?
Oh, that's so not fair. There's so many. So I guess it would be probably the case of Marmalade, which was a diabetic cat that had gone missing. And this was when my back was injured. I had a back injury and ended up medically retiring out of police work and then shifted into the pet detective work full time. But I had this woman that brought me and my bloodhound AJ out. And the moment I stepped out of my truck, her husband was there and he said, that dog will never find that cat. You know, so it was this negative statement. So I'm not stepping. And I, at the time, I didn't even know if AJ would be able to find a cat. I knew he had found a lot of people and he understood smell the smell, follow the scent trail. But I had never trained him or used him on a missing pet case. I had only used my other dog, Rachel, on that. And so, I'm like, great. I don't know if he can do this either, you know? And so, but we scented him on the bedding. And AJ tracked down and walked up and found that he went down this hill and into some bushes. I couldn't work him because my back was hurt, but a volunteer worked him, and AJ helped to find that cat, and the cat was no longer alive. So this is one of those bad stories, but the owner was so grateful. She said, my mom died 5 months ago. I never cried and haven't cried over losing her, but I have not slept the past two nights. Not, you know, thinking I would never find Marmalade. At least now I can bury my cat. So, yeah. So there have been a lot of, you know, sad cases too, but just the peace that people have of having closure has been important. But obviously on a daily basis, on our Facebook page, on the Missing Animal Response Network Facebook page, we share a lot of recoveries of the people that are out there recovering dogs and cats. And it's just, those are all happy ones. It's just great.
No, that's great. I'm actually glad you shared that one. Ultimately, that is probably the best thing you can do to help anyone is the sense of closure. I think just having a pet go missing and then never knowing is worse, in my opinion. So
yeah,
that's awesome. And then what is something you'd like to leave our audience with?
Huh? I think hope, because we live in such a hopeless time right now, you know, with everything and the going on in the, well, gosh, not even mentioning the Middle East, but what's going on, the division in our country right now, because like I am so totally not into politics, mm-hmm. just, you know, but so many are. And so many, you know, think of Christian, when you hear the word Christian anymore, you're thinking in terms of, you know, red or blue or left or right and all this stuff. And it's like, you know what, those things don't matter. And so just the hope that there is more out there, and I'm not talking UFOs, but that there is so much more available to you, you know, in this lifetime. And I would just encourage you to explore it. You know, I'm an investigator. I love to investigate things, you know, and I just don't fall for anything. Right. But the fact that I have, Jesus as my close friend and I'd say he's my pilot and I'm the co-pilot. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing, incredible life of purpose. And I would just encourage others to look into it.
Oh, I love that answer. And Kat, this was such, I mean, this flew by. I'm so thankful and I'm so glad we got connected, and I will continue to be a huge and avid reader and fan of yours. There's many ways to find her, but I guarantee you her stories are not only inspirational, but they're thoroughly entertaining. And you have such a great, not quite self-deprecating sense of humor, because you don't go like too far, but you're like on that side, which is my side, and I love that side. So thank you again, Kat, and thank you to everyone for listening at home. And remember, the best way to support our show is head over to mikeyopp.com. That's mikeyopp.com, and sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Much love to everyone listening, and safe travels. You've been listening to Coffin Talk. My name is Mike Oppenheim, and we will see you soon.